teams, our priority. Join the conversation with the Killer Bees. Now coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Brendan Riley in for Jeremy Branham. I'm realizing, B-Mac, have you heard the most recent iteration of Who Said It?
I guess define what the most
recent... It goes through a lot of changes. So you are the one who picked the questions today.
Correct.
You set the bar for us. You know what they look like. What's the number that we're supposed to be? That's the current iteration. Joel and I on a team, essentially versus you, but be honest with us.
I'm going to set the bar at 2.
All right, let's do it.
Oh, man. You want to lay some money on that with Gal's money otherwise?
Can we make it a BZ money?
Can we make up the money we might lose?
Now, wait a minute. I shouldn't say that because you picked the clip. So there's a chance that you made them harder than we're normally used to.
I think
when
you set the bar low.
Okay.
I think 2 is going to be easy.
I agree with that. But I don't want to get because I don't want to get overconfident and cocky and blow it. The road has been paved. I just want to drive the truck.
If you haven't picked it up, I'm all about the overconfidence.
Yeah, I picked it up. Yeah.
All right, it's time for Who Said It.
All right, so first one. This is a quote about the Texans jersey exchange, just to kind of set the scene. And
I
that's
already
really
have an
the
answer.
Reason why Hinnish hasn't been as good of a player in the regular season as in the preseason. Has nothing to do with going up against starters instead of backups. It's because he's not wearing the number 69 anymore. Dug his own grave.
Okay. The topic who came to my mind initially was Paul. It's like kind of sports, but not really sports. I think Paul loves those topics. After hearing it, I have a lot of names in mind.
Who would be talking about the jersey exchange? Paul. Wheelhouse.
Right.
Don't think the bench would be.
The quote sounds like it could come from the bench, but I agree. I'm less confident they would be talking
don't
about it.
Don't think Creighton would be.
No, I agree.
Is it Heine that had 69?
Who yeah, that's correct.
Heine, yeah. So, I mean, let's
the only hesitation I have...
You said you're going to kill it.
Well,
you wanted to know if I was going to be.
I've never been in this situation before.
Are you feeling less
confident
now?
A little bit less confident.
Well, yeah, because I also want to just see. I want to test my teammate so I know his intestinal fortitude. If he was the one that was braggadociously saying how he felt like he was going to kill it, and when I normally let Jeremy pick, he screws everything up. I'm wondering if I shouldn't just test the waters early so I know how hard I have to work on this thing.
oh boy.
Talk it through some more. Try to convince me.
So the topic to me.
I can see Paul
screams Paul.
Yeah,
you're right. Wheelhouse football makes sense.
No, wheelhouse talk football.
But I'm trying to think who would say. I don't think Jake would say that. BK
could.
But the thing with BK quotes, though, and this is my one concern on Paul. Paul and BK quotes usually have something in them that sounds like ridiculous.
Give it to me one more time, B-Mac.
So the quote is. That's really the reason why Heinisch hasn't been as good in the regular season as in the preseason. Has nothing to do with going up against starters instead of backups. It's because he's not wearing the number 69 anymore. Dug his own grave.
I'm going to say Paul.
I'm going to say Paul as well. I'll go with it.
All right, let's lock it.
But this is on you. If you miss.
That's really the reason why Heinisch has not been as good in the regular
season.
The
Paul season BK rule.
The preseason.
It's the number change.
That's nothing to do with the fact that he's going up against starters
work a little
instead of backups.
It's the Paul BK
to do
rule.
With people caring more in the regular season versus the preseason. It's because he doesn't wear the number 16.
All right, BK.
Digging his own grave.
Didn't get that one.
I can't
run the table. My weekend's already starting to get pissed off.
I would never suggest this rule on the other side of the glass.
Uh-huh.
But Paul and BK should be picked together.
Nope.
Because if you think it's one of them and you're wrong,
so you're
I don't
start
need
blaming
charity.
The weather too? Are you going to start talking about the roof being
yeah,
open?
I don't need charity. Let's go.
I'm just
give
saying
number 2.
I'm just saying if you pick one and you're wrong, it's almost always the other one.
Mm. Are you ready for number 2? You want to talk about the roof some more?
We can go to number 2.
All right, number 2. Yeah, good dude that Jeffrey Dahmer. We're weird as human beings that we're so infatuated with that stuff. When everyone agrees it's a bad human being, but we can't not watch.
I think it's Lance.
I said
pause,
Lance.
Pause.
Gut feeling Lance right off the top.
Pause. I'll be watching that this weekend.
Even more Lance.
Really? I wasn't sure about that
part. It's definitely the bench, in my opinion. And if you say always trust your gut with me, then my gut, from the minute you started reading the quote, was Lance.
Is there anybody, just to talk it through, is there anybody else who comes to mind at all? Lance was my first gut as well.
Both those guys are also big on the documentaries and the Netflix and things like that.
Non-sports, news of the weird type of story.
Yeah.
I think they often get into thoughts like that. Like, yeah. It's weird that we're like this. Yeah. Is there anybody else who comes to mind at all? Is this like just a
I think it's a no-brainer that you could talk it through and try to convince me there's somebody else.
The problem is I'm struggling. The last one I could have convinced myself it was almost anybody but Patrick.
Yeah?
I literally can't think of another name here.
You just used BK. I don't think you're going to use him again.
I don't like playing that game. I don't know BMAC well enough to know, but I regularly use people back-to-back. Yeah, let's just lock in Lance. I'm having a hard time seeing anybody else.
Okay, Lance.
Yeah, good dude, that Jeffrey Dahmer.
Not bad human being.
No, we are weird as human beings that we're so infatuated by that type of stuff.
He used BK twice. Yuck.
When everyone would agree it's a bad human being, but we can't not watch.
Ah, we got three left. We're going to be fine.
Playing this weekend.
We're going to be fine.
BMAC, you're starting to piss me off, too.
You can start talking about through.
Blowing out my theories and blowing up my philosophies on these things. And now we're 0 for the first two.
We got plenty left.
Boy, Riley, you are not doing anything.
He only challenged us to get two.
You're
he told us.
Dare I say there's someone that I...
Yankees, you'll be fine.
That Jeremy's better than you. Ooh. There's fired. The motivation you needed.
I want to be very clear. We had the exact same first response on that one. You can blame me for the first one. You cannot blame me for that one.
I just told you what my first gut reaction was.
Which was the same as mine.
All right, number three. Athletes, when they get into relationships with the Kardashians and the Jenners, always succeed, right? They always thrive in their career. If that play goes downhill, we know why. Because of this. Cursed by the Kardashians.
Isn't this in regards to, like, isn't Dak Prescott some new marketing deal with Kylie Jenner?
With Kylie Jenner.
That's very valuable information there, because I was trying to figure out what sport this was.
No, I remembered the story.
Oh, I hate this game. My least favorite thing we do every week.
You just got done saying how much you love it.
You were so looking forward.
It's a little different when you're over here, isn't it?
Yeah. You don't realize, like, it's funny because when I put them together, some of them feel so obvious. But they're really not.
No, but we know the story it's related to. Now, which show would actually this be surrounding that would be going this? Pauly would definitely take on this.
I think it could be anybody but Patrick. If I had to gut, I'd probably go Wheelhouse. This man did not take BK three times in a row, right? I hate playing that version of the game.
I like Pauly in this one. We haven't used him yet. I like Pauly. I like the fact that this is the kind of topic. A Kardashian topic always screams Paul.
You're not wrong.
And I don't want to pick Paul twice. The only other thing to me would be like twice. A news of the weird, but it's not that weird. That's not weird. That's just topical.
I don't want to pick Paul twice and be wrong twice because it makes me look bad. That's my problem.
You already love
Paul.
Him, but
that's the point. If I can't pick out a Paul quote,
but you can blame me because I suggested him first.
I don't hate it. I just am afraid to pick it and be wrong. And you're right.
Well, you should have that mentality in the first two.
You are very good at this game. I do believe that. So I will go with you.
I'm
going to
try and own this one and say Paul.
Paul.
Athletes, when they get in relationships with the Kardashian/Jenners, always succeed, right? They always thrive and their careers don't fall out of favor.
I'm going to tell you something right now. As much as we give him a hard time about freaking Paul, I'm going to start giving you a whole lot of hard time about this BK love you got going on.
So what happened? He's run this game before.
Three BKs?
How many BKs has he had in the past? See, the difference between...
That's sheer laziness. You know that the quote machine's going to kick him out, so you don't even look at other shows.
No, there was part of it. We had some equipment malfunction.
Uh-huh.
My processes were limited. But also, I don't want to give if I had it from, like, one from each person every single time, because I've heard this from Joel last week, well, we've already had Lance, we've already had this person.
See, yeah.
I don't want you playing that game.
Here's the thing. I know how I put them together. And they've had enough experience. This is coming out of nowhere. I've never had any experience. This is playing on a road environment at a new stadium. All right, we can still win this. I'm still not done on this.
Now, I set the line at two. There's only two left.
That's okay.
All right, so this next one, number four, was a attempted joke that went horribly wrong. It is as follows. Well, I hope Oswald goes Oswald and O for tonight. Huh?
Say it again. I cringe at making you say that again with the emotions in it, but say it again.
This is a setup for a really bad joke that did not go over on the show it happened on. But the quote is, well, I hope Oswald goes Oswald and O for tonight. Eh?
Paul. So, really? I can see it. My instant reaction is Jake. I've told Jake this pretty much as long as I've known him, before he was
actually,
over
I
here.
Can see, yeah.
Jake is such a lovable idiot.
I'm not going to say the first part. He's an idiot.
He is such a lovable idiot. And what lovable idiots do is they make jokes that fail. And
like my dad jokes.
And Jake will follow, like, he will do it with confidence no matter how many times they fail. I can see Paul. The eh especially makes me think Paul. That's the one thing that makes me hesitate on Jake. I don't know if Jake would be looking for the, you know. But here's the thing. The idea that it failed miserably with Paul means Sean butted in to say it was a bad joke. Like, there's nobody.
Well, but Sean is very interactive
absolutely
on the program.
Absolutely.
So I can see that being dialogue. Again, I'm already furious at BK, but I mean at BMAC about BK.
Can I say BK is possible still?
Oh, don't write it off, obviously, with the fact that he's got posters in his bathroom shower of BK.
It's psychological torture that you took BK.
I think
three
you're
times
right that the end of it, that little eh, I think is Paul. But you're right. I could see Jake saying it too.
We took the Panthers earlier, which is the one thing I was begging you guys to do. In BZ Money, I was begging you to take the Panthers.
Oh, I see you do this. You're going to find something that gets you off the hook for going with me.
No. I was begging for that earlier. If you want to go with mine, your call. If you want to go with mine, we can.
Who do you think is Jake?
I lean Jake, but I like Paul too.
Well, I think it's one of those two for sure.
All right, give me Jake. You cool, Jake?
Okay,
go. Let's go, Jake.
Well, I hope Oswald goes Oswald and O for tonight.
We went Oswald and O.
Whole freaking weekend. Oswald just went in the toilet.
You know what? I tried something. It didn't work. We're just going to move on.
I didn't consider Cody.
I didn't. Freaking Stoots.
I actually felt really good that it was one of the two we talked about.
We're 0 for 4, Brendan. Someone lovable that wouldn't mind making the joke and failing.
Yeah,
you just had the wrong lovable guy.
Cody can definitely play that role, too. I think Jake does it more on that show. But Cody absolutely can, too.
Dare I say it, I want Branham back.
Oh, stop it. It's my first time. I'm a rookie.
Well, God, don't go 0-for.
Just let me do this again. We'll be fine.
Jeremy Pena. Hit the home run late that we need after completely looking outmatched in your first playoff game.
All right, what's our last one?
All right, last one. I already got season tickets as a media member, but I will buy season tickets again if they do a Deshaun Watson-themed Tiny Towel giveaway at the Texans-Browns game.
Who's got? You know the credential list. Who's got the credential
I don't
for
know
every
the,
game?
I don't know the football credential list.
I was looking at if you had at least some inside information.
My gut is Cody. But I don't know if he would. I don't know.
See,
if
my gut is that he could go BK again.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
And we haven't used Paul yet.
Me and you are going to have some problems if you went BK again. Not because, like, because of off-air stuff. I may have suggested the idea of four people, four times for the same person in one
See,
game.
See, you're dirty, too.
I've never done it.
I've beaten you guys like a drum for so long that you have to do that kind of conspiring.
I think I want to lean Cody.
Look, Jeremy Pena, this is your moment because you've led me down the wrong path. I'm leaving this all on you. Save yourself, sir. Hit a home run when you need it. At least get on the board.
You got the jet stream out to right.
Jake's not. Jake is not buying
roof's
season
open.
Tickets.
Oh, should it be closed?
The bench isn't buying season tickets in this scenario, are they?
No. Oh, John already has.
But they're not buying them
and Lance
again
doesn't
because
go
of
to
this.
Games.
I don't think it's Paul.
Although he likes credentials. Did he get here in time for football?
B-Mac?
Oh, he did for this year.
This is BK.
That's your final answer?
This is BK.
I already get season tickets. That was being a member of the press.
Here's the drive! Way back! It might be! It could be! It is!
Riley on the board! We still fell short, but way to go.
Ah, rookie appearance. What can you say? It took a few at-bats.
You 100% got the motivation for why I did what
I'm
I did.
I'm so mad. We don't have time for me to explain why
you?
I'm so mad.
I'm more mad.
I think yesterday there was one of the most interesting trades
in
recent memory.
Worst showing we've ever had.
One of the most interesting trades in recent memory in football. We're going to get to that. This is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned into the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Brand.
I feel like a rookie who just hit his first career
you
hit in the major leagues.
You salvaged one to be respected at least somewhat instead of being a complete failure, and he's celebrating by playing cool in the game.
No.
My weekend already
sucked. Joel, you're misreading the situation. He's celebrating me.
No, Joel's right.
What?
It wasn't a good pitch, okay? I'm sorry, Luis Severino, you didn't get it off the plate far enough.
So you got lucky. So essentially, you got lucky.
I pulled that into the Crawford box.
I'm a rookie. I don't know what you expected from me. I'm proud. I'm going to take that ball home with me.
I was expecting the guy that said he was going 5-0.
Yeah, I mean, good players are confident. Sometimes
I'm old enough to remember
when
you were confident.
And my favorite part of the program is who said it.
I had a great performance.
Zacarias Hernandez.
We're going to get back into the Astros in just a little bit. But Christian McCaffrey traded to the San Francisco 49ers, and I think it's fascinating. Maybe because I don't think running backs are very important, but the guy who has turned every running back he's ever had into a high-end running back now has maybe the best running back in the league, certainly one of the best running backs in the league. And I'm curious how much you think it matters for them. Like, how much does it impact the 49ers?
A massive amount. And this is do or die, boom or bust, better win it all, like, this year type decision-making by the Niners. This is straight fire sale for Carolina. They're not done. They're probably going to trade more of their veteran pieces away. They already got rid of their coach, so it is the fast-forward start to a complete rebuild that is going to be trying to stockpile as many assets while unloading as many contracts as they possibly can. From a Niners perspective, here are the thoughts. They already gave up too many assets and overpaid for Trey Lance at this point. You're lucky enough you did what I said you were supposed to do and hang on to Garoppolo. He ain't the long-term answer, but he's there at least for this year. The fact that it works is because you just sold the farm again. You gave up way too much, in my opinion. I think you could have gotten him for a second and some sweeteners.
I don't know.
They just want the contract off the books. He's been hurt. So this is why I think it's boom or bust for the Niners. I think that they're mortgaging the entire farm based on everything they gave up for both Lance and for McCaffrey. So they're in straight go for it. They're more than the Rams go for it this year mode.
I've seen people compare it to the Rams, and I think it's a good comparison. I also agree that they overpaid, but not in the sense that they could have gotten him for less.
I think you got him for two picks.
A second and a third, maybe.
A second and a third, and I think that you easily could have gotten that deal done. I don't think that... I wonder who made the offer that put it on the table, because I don't think that Carolina says no if you just say a second and a third.
See, what I'm curious is, would either of them done a first? Because if I'm San Francisco...
No way with his injury history.
I'd rather give him a first than a second, third, fourth, and fifth.
His injury salary, his salary, his injury history, there's no way that deal gets done for that.
But
there's no way that anybody gets a first.
But if I'm San Francisco, I'd rather give a first than a second, third, fourth, and fifth. That's four cheap players versus one.
Yeah, but like I said, they're in go-for-it now mode. The reason why this works for San Francisco is you got Debo. So because you got Debo, McCaffrey doesn't have to be your every-down running back between the tackles, and McCaffrey can do what he gets best. Get out in space. They can get him out of the backfield. They can get him, you know, and believe me, we all know this. Shanahan, with a few weeks to prepare and work him into the system, he's going to find ways to put him in space. He's not going to be expected to be the entire offense of a Carolina Panthers. He's going to be a complimentary piece that helps take pressure off of Jimmy G.
I love watching Kyle Shanahan offenses because they just look... I mean, I hate that his quarterback's been Jimmy Garoppolo, but the offenses just look like he's on a different level than most of the league. I'm so curious to see what an offense with probably the best running back receiver in Debo Samuel. I don't know if there's another receiver. Like, Cordarrelle Patterson's pretty damn good at the role of both, too. But Debo Samuel is elite in the backfield as a wide receiver. And on the flip side, Christian McCaffrey is one of the better pass-catching running backs we've ever seen.
You got one of the top five tight ends in the game, too.
Sure.
I'm just saying all the weapons that he has to work with.
Oh, all sorts of weapons. But I just, like, I'm curious what the hell the offense looks like with two guys who are both capable of being, you know, runners or pass catchers. I don't think it's going to make the difference that they hope it does. And a small part of me, even though, you know, I'll admit I care a lot less about the Rams this year since Stafford won the Super Bowl last year, but I still root for them. A part of me wants to see this offense succeed just because it could be really interesting. It could be really different.
I mean, look, you've got Bosa that's been hurt. The defense has been dinged up, but they're ready to win. I mean, they've got a really good defense. And so all the elements are there in a very jumbled up NFC, too, where a lot
that's
of teams
the
that
thing.
Were favorites at the start of the year, Green Bay and the Rams and teams like that, they're all 3-3. So if you could just kind of distance yourself from them, I don't think that Philly scares them. I think that they could actually get there because of a move like this that puts them over the top from a running back where they lost some running backs. They were a little bit depleted there. I think this helps them in the short term. I think it kills them long term if they don't win it all.
I'm very in on the 49ers making a win now move. I think, like you said, the NFC is very weak. We had the discussion maybe a week ago, who's the second best team in the NFC. I still don't know the answer to that question. I'm not a Cowboys, maybe.
First of all, I'm not going that route, and I'm not, because I don't believe in Dak carrying a team either.
Yeah, I like the Cowboys, but I don't think anybody in the NFC short of the Eagles is super impressive.
See, and I'm not a believer in the Eagles.
I think the Eagles are legit. I think the Eagles are legit, but beyond them, I think it's a complete crapshoot. And I like being a buyer to put your name in the hat for the number two team.
You're telling me if you get 2 minutes on the clock to win a big game that you're going to put it in Jalen Hurts' hands and feel it's going to get done?
Yes. I think their offense is dynamic.
I'm still not there yet.
I think their defense is elite.
Their defense is really, really good.
If you ask me right here, right now, to power rank the NFL teams, I think I'd have the Eagles at 3.
Injuries happen, Brendan. The whole season's got to be played out.
Yeah.
Look, kudos to where they are. They're the only undefeated team left standing. Sure. But I'm saying that the number one most important position on the field is a guy that in that position a year ago in Tampa didn't do it. They haven't played a hellacious schedule to date. So I want to see more. But I'm giving them their kudos for what they've done so far. I just don't think they're going to represent the NFC in the Super Bowl.
I think I'm bigger on the Cowboys than you two.
Yeah.
And I think
Parsons is the defensive player of the year.
I think what they did against Cowboys last week on Sunday Night Football, admittedly,
boy Cooper Rush throwing three picks.
Yeah, Cooper Rush sucks, but the offense was good too. The Philly offense was good. I do believe in Philly, but I think after Philly that there is an open spot for number two. And if you don't believe in Philly, you're telling me you think there's an open spot for number one. So I like the buyer move. I think buying a running back is weird, but if there's one place where I could see it making sense, it's San Francisco. I can understand Kyle Shanahan going, man, this offense is built around the run. I don't want to do this with Jeff Wilson.
I want to say yesterday I threw the Niners in the mix with Jeremy as a team that where he could possibly end up just because they needed a running back. I just didn't think they'd give up this much, and I didn't think they were going to have to. So now I look at it, and I'm like, I think it's this year or bust for them. When you think about all those picks that we just said that they gave up for McCaffrey, all they had to give up for Trey Lance, they're not getting anything out of the draft for the foreseeable future. And they're cap-strapped with all that they had to restructure and give Debo more. They've already had to pay a majority of their defensive players, and they're paying Kittle. Kittle's going to be there long term. You're going to have to pay him. Garoppolo took a pay cut, but still, I just think this is a all in for this year Niners move, and I'm not sure that they're going to get it done because of Jimmy G.
I'm super curious to see how it plays out. I am. I Christian McCaffrey when he's healthy is really fun to watch. Kyle Shanahan offenses when clicking are fun to watch. The combo could be good. Let's get back to Astros baseball. Joel, I read an article this morning that, while it wasn't necessarily the point of the article, I think it made the case, the way the Astros are winning is super conductive to postseason success. This is the Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Daniel Kramer, who, funny enough, covers the Mariners normally for MLB.com, had an article about the Astros yesterday that I thought had a couple interesting observations. You know, we talked earlier today about how they're winning games close. And, you'd of course, feel a little bit more confident, Joel, if they were winning games by a lot. So the Astros have scored 16 of their 20 home runs this postseason via home run. Do you know the record for teams this postseason who out-homer their opponents?
I don't.
16-5.
Okay.
That is the way you win games.
Well, the Yankees tried to structure their team like that. I don't want to say their credit, but if you want to give them any excuse, it's the fact that Benintendi and LeMahieu are out of the lineup. They made a move late at the deadline to try and get a guy that basically filled a need for them, which was a guy that hit more for average than Benintendi. They had a guy that hit for average in LeMahieu, and he got hurt, and his toe is just not capable of getting him to put weight on it. But overall, we all know it's boom or bust with the Yankees. It's just, don't take this the wrong way, but it's boom or bust on steroids right now with the lineup they put out there.
See, I think the thing that the Astros have done well, though, and I think Dusty talked about this a little bit yesterday, yeah, the runs are coming on home runs, but they only have 10 home runs. I mean, that's a lot, but like, they're getting home runs with people on base. They're doing a good enough job of getting guys on base, so when they hit the home runs, they matter more.
It's a good point, and a lot then is on the manager to structure the lineup accordingly when you're, that's the way you're trying to win ball games. I don't think Dusty has done anything spectacular. He doesn't have to, because as much as we discussed Altuve at the top yesterday, everybody else for the most part is doing their job. So you know that whoever gets in a spot with runners on base, two strikes or not, two outs or not, two out runs have been a big thing for this team in the playoffs too. And they're capable of pulling through and coming through. And the guys, aside from DH, whoever's in the DH position, have stepped up too, including Maldi.
There's no sustained spot in the order where you feel like, oh, shoot, this is where we are. There's no chance they can score.
Yeah, it's
here.
Not the black hole of 7-8-9 in the regular season.
When you get to 7-8-9, I do find myself thinking, like, get to a place where you can get somebody on for the top of the order.
But Chaz has gone yard.
Sure.
Maldi's got multiple hits, which you didn't expect.
RBIs, so, too, I believe.
Yeah, including the first one that they needed to get off the schneid early in game one. So, look, I believe that their bottom half of the order has done more than expected, and you can't complain about a thing that they're doing. But I think that timeliness is a big factor in sitting where they are right now. Not just the timely hit, but everybody kind of timely enough getting their job done at the plate.
And I don't know. I kind of feel like they can maintain this. The out being the team,
it's
the
not outlandish.
Well, it felt like, I don't know where they ended up at the end of the year. I don't know where their numbers were at the end of the year. But I remember looking at various points throughout the season, and the Astros were scoring more than 50% of their runs at times.
I look at Altuve and I thought, you know, as much as he's behind Manny Ramirez for the all-time most home runs hit postseason, I felt like it was attainable in this playoffs because I felt like he was multiple times going to hit home runs.
Did you see the Bregman stat?
Yeah, and now Bregman's the all-time home run leader in playoff games by a third baseman, which is a little bit surprising to me as well. And he was surprised by it. But I think that
it's like 14. It's a solid number.
14 or 15, yeah. I think that when you look at where Altuve is, the beauty, to get to your point of what you were talking about, is because you've gotten the home runs and some of that timeliness from the bottom half, you still expect there will be times when the top half is heard from again. Altuve will be heard from, period, I believe, and hit at least one home run between now and the end of their run. I believe Yordan is obviously good for a couple more. I think Bregman has shown you, especially at home, he's going to get you a couple more. Yuli shocked the world and got you something that you didn't expect. But there's enough guys with pop. Tucker got you one already. That the top half's going to give you a couple more.
You have
from multiple guys, but I think that the fact that Chaz can still go Oppo Otako on you at any time is big.
You have a really good combination. I mean, we've talked about it at various points throughout the show today and really throughout the whole season. You have a good combination of really everything. You have guys getting on base. You guys have guys hitting for power, but you also have pitchers who, I know Verlander can certainly be susceptible at times to the home run ball, but you have guys who are putting you in a position where if you can get one or two, that might be enough.
Look at Fromber's numbers not giving up home runs that they were talking about last night. Of all the starts he made this year, I think 20-some of those games he didn't give up a bomb against a team that relies on the bomb. And then a team that traditionally, as compared to other Astros teams, doesn't have quite that boom or bust type element to it. There's guys that you raise an eyebrow sometimes, but go, oh, we got a home run from Yuli. Oh, we got one from Maldi. Oh, we got one from Chaz. And your meteor lineup are more damage guys, but not necessarily home run guys. You look at it and say, that's another thing that you should be highly encouraged about. There's extra pop. Yuli got extra pop in the playoffs that we didn't expect.
I think in this series in particular, one thing that you feel is, and I don't know, maybe you disagree with me, once you get through the top of the Yankees order, I feel okay.
I'm looking at it, Brendan. I look at it every single time through the lineup going, the minute that I see Stanton sit down,
yeah,
I'm not worried. Donaldson can't hit off-speed pitches. And Aaron Boone, I think, should be scrutinized even more for what they gave attention to at the start of the game but didn't follow up on after the game. Taking the risk of putting the young kid at shortstop and putting in a lot of inexperienced players at the bottom of the lineup really bit him in the ass last night.
Now,
top to bottom, it's just not a lineup that could compete with the Astros.
Admittedly, on the other side of things, maybe this is only because Yordan's cooled off just a little bit, I do feel more scared at the top of the Yankees lineup than I am confident at the top of the Astros lineup. The difference is, with the Astros, I feel okay throughout. I feel like there isn't an inning that comes up for the Astros where I'm like, well, This is an empty inning. They're not doing it.
I would say there's more reason to believe the Yankees' current struggles, like not hitting the breaking pitches, continues than there's reason to believe Altuve, Alvarez, and Tucker will stay cold.
I agree with that. And people forget Alvarez got a hit last night, and it was a really good hit.
Right. I'm just saying, since the two home runs in games one and two against Seattle, it's gone down a little bit. But look, the Yankees, a lot of these same guys, especially Aaron Judge, weren't hitting the curveball back in 2017. This is those guys faced Lance McCullers, and it was the same thing all those years ago. So I don't think there's a lot of reason to believe that'll flip around, especially, as you pointed out, when 5-9 is pretty weak for them.
Now, there is one other fun fact from that article that had less to do with, you know, the way they're – it was less of a positive, I guess, is what I would say. But I thought it was still an interesting fun fact. Houston's +7 run differential is the lowest ever for a team to start 5-0 in the postseason.
But that gives you another stat that backs up the fact how close it's been for this team to come out on top of all these tight games. I mean, that was the tightest sweep I think you'll see in playoff baseball maybe in quite some time, if not in history. I think that the way they've won these games against the Yankees, they haven't, you know, blown doors off. They've been in tough competitive baseball games that they've proven that they have confidence and they have the ability to execute when they need to. But I believe the biggest factor when you look at this too is to what we were talking about, the breakout chance to really do something to change that stat is still coming. Altuve hyper-focused when he hears all the hate in a place against a team that he's excelled at, I believe it's coming. And I believe that Mancini now, and Dusty brings up a good point. Dusty has committed to Mancini for the way he kind of mentioned in the quote. It sounds like for the next two games, it's going to be Mancini because he knows the Yankees in the same division, knows the pitchers. He feels confident that Mancini's going to be the guy that helps him at DH. If you get anything at all from the DH, and Altuve gives you something too, and everybody else just does what they've been doing, I'm fine.
This is admittedly a little bit of revisionist history on my part, but you said a lot about how the series against the Mariners was like the closest sweep ever, and maybe it was. I have a hard time looking at a sweep and feeling anything other but anything
you swept
other
five
than
game
like
series in four. You played a whole extra game.
Yeah.
That shows you how
tight
it was.
You know you're not wrong. I don't think that your statement is false. Like I'm not going to sit here and kill you for the opinion because I think you're honestly right. But just like from an emotional point of view, I have a hard time looking at a sweep against a team. By the way, a team that in the regular season came at you like they were going to be a problem and then you swept them. Was it in four?
I tweeted the fact that you ruined, you took away a Mariners World Series three times in one season.
It's just a little hard after the fact to feel that level of respect for them. Like, people talk about the Astros being the Yankees' daddies. It feels like that with the Mariners.
Pedro said it last night.
And I get that it was a close series. I just have a hard time feeling like it was.
Well, you know what? You have a whole lot of feelings going on, and some of them are overconfident.
What's wrong
feelings.
With feelings?
That's fine. Nothing. I'm not saying hide your feelings. I'm just saying as you ride the emotional wave of your feelings, understand that, you know, you can feel a certain kind of way about this team. I feel like maybe it's my way of saying the best is yet to come for this squad, because that's why I keep saying there's no ceiling. We haven't seen a ceiling for this team and said that's about the best you could have ever expected for offensively. Not even close. You could expect so much more because of the guys we're talking about that haven't stepped up yet. From a pitching perspective, you could say, well, God, I mean, that's about as good a pitching performance you're ever going to see. But at the same time, you realize that Verlander still wasn't his utmost best. He had one hiccup. He came back and it was good stat. If you just looked at the box score, it looked like a great start, but he had some issues. So there's still room for improvement all over. You don't know what's going on with Stanek, so there's room to even get better in the bullpen. That's the beauty of where they're sitting undefeated in this run of the playoffs so far, is there's room across the board for them to get even better.
We do, by the way, have a question from Lamont earlier on that I wanted to get to.
Okay.
And I think it's interesting. As of right now, who is the Astros MVP in the postseason?
I just don't think you can turn the other cheek at Yordan. I think that... Sure, Pena had the big timely hit, and he's had multiple hits. But you don't win game one or game two without Yordan Alvarez.
And game one feels... that series feels a lot different if you lose game
one. It also feels like it's so far away from at the time. It was like nerve calming the way...
Yeah,
they were an out from being down 0-1.
I wouldn't even say nerve calming.
Panic.
You went from a... Well, I don't want to go that far either. But you went from nervous, and I'm not speaking for you, I went from nervous to super confident.
I went from holy crap, they're trailing, to oh, this is over.
Yeah, it felt soul crushing on the, like, you felt like it was.
Elon's got to be the answer as far as MVP. I mean, I would give a tip of the cap to Pena and Bregman, who had big series as well.
Those are the two who I was honestly thinking of.
But Alvarez has got to be the answer.
Hmm.
Who are you giving it to?
I think Eileen Pena.
Yeah, but that, is that just because of game the clincher in Seattle?
I think, I mean, no, he's been, he hasn't, so here's what I look at it as. They both had one massive moment, right? You had the clincher in Seattle, and you had the walk-off by Jordan.
But Jordan also had the go-ahead homer in game two, though. He really had two moments, more than just one.
That was early, wasn't it?
I think it was sixth inning.
Oh, I mean, six is later than I remember it being in my head, so that's fair. In my memory of the postseason, they both have one massive moment. And as
Jordan,
a whole...
Jordan, to me, he's got two. He's got them back-to-back.
Jeremy Pena has been the better hitter.
Three hits in the first game. He had three big hits in the first game.
Sure, yeah. He helped you get back in the first game, too. I mean,
he won the first game for you. He had multiple RBIs in the first game for you. He basically got you off on the... and propelled you to where you are now.
I think Jeremy Pena has been the more consistent across-the-board hitter who also has his own moment. I have no problem with Alvarez.
Is there an argument that he's seen better pitches, too?
Sure.
Because of the fact that pretty much everybody was saying they were going to pitch around, whether they did completely or not, Jordan.
Sure. I think that's fine. I would also counter with the way Bregman's playing, Jordan's getting, like you said earlier, they are pitching to him, whether or not, we thought they would. And there were a couple walks he got in the Seattle series, but for the most
Yankees are pitching to him.
Yeah, for the most part, the Yankees are pitching to him. I think it's those three. I don't know if you can really bring up a pitcher. They don't get enough input in these series. I go Pena. I have no problem with Alvarez as the pick.
I think you could make the argument that both with Pena and Alvarez, the Astros are not undefeated the postseason with either. Like if you
without either,
yeah. Well, I'd agree with that. If you remove Pena, they're not undefeated. If you remove Alvarez, they're obviously not undefeated. So
yeah, I agree with that.
Because Pena has to get on base for Alvarez.
Well, if you remove Bregman now, you're not undefeated because you lose the game last night without Bregman.
True, yeah, 100%.
All right, I'm curious, and this is not just an Astros question. This is a Houston sports question as a whole. When we come back on Monday, what will be the biggest story? ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Joel, the Brendan Riley filling in for Jeremy Branham, by the way, as we wrap up the week. Joel, I told you off air that $70 is the most I've ever spent on a pair of shoes, and the look that you gave me.
What the hell is that? $70? Would you get a pair of Skechers?
No, I think they're Nikes.
Oh, stop. Mall Walkers?
I think they're basketball shoes. I'm not.
I literally made up that name. I don't think there's an Air Mall Walker, but it sounds like for $70 you got something at like Shoe Carnival.
It's funny you say that, because in my mind, $70, I know that the shoe game, like you're talking hundreds of dollars, but in my mind, $70 is a decent pair of shoes.
It's not nothing. I have a hard time finding shoes I like for under like $115.
Oh, my God.
That's usually what I spend on a pair of shoes. Now, that being said, I am frugal to the point where I'll get those shoes and then wear them for, 3-4 years and not buy another pair.
I'm a little mad at myself when I go in the closet and look at the shoes that I did spend way more than that on that are, like, valued, to me, valued so much that they sit in a box staying nice that I rarely wear. So that bothers me. But also, my priorities have changed whether I like it or not. When I was a single dude working for the Rockets, I'd buy Jordans, I'd buy rare shoes. Everybody knows I was a sneakerhead and I had, like, hundreds of pairs of shoes. Now, between kids and wife and mortgages and things that we got going on, they do all the spending. I do all the supervising of it to make sure that we keep it in line because I don't spend anything on myself anymore. But like a couple years ago when they did the limited edition version of the Justin Timberlake, I got a pair of those. I got a couple of the Jordan 11s in different colors. That's about the extent of it.
In another life where I made a lot more money, I think shoes would be a fun, thing to collect. I know people are really into them. They're just so expensive for nice shoes.
Now, did you see the show coming out? Because kind of to take it to a different level, but also same kind of similar topic. There's a new show coming out called Million Dollar Ride.
I saw that, yeah. It's on TNT or TBS.
Yeah, yeah. The promos are during the baseball games. I know I watch commercials, Brendan. But you've got, between Kim Kardashian and Jamie Foxx and all these people and the guys who sell the cars to them, no matter how much money I make in my life or how much money I roll into, I could never in a million years think that there was any scenario where I would drop $1 million on a car.
You know what, Joel? I'm going to declare right here, right now, I will never buy a $1 million car.
Me too.
Yeah, I feel pretty safe saying that.
Choice, by the way. Not financial situation. Now, I'll definitely make enough money to buy $1 million car one day. But I'll never make that choice.
Like, rando, when I'm walking my dogs, and we go on a couple-mile walk, a lot of times I go by houses where the garage doors are up, and I'll see, like, you know, a van and or an SUV, and all of a sudden I'll see tucked away in the garage a Ferrari or a Maserati or even and lots of Teslas, too, that I'm like, I understand the Tesla from the standpoint you're saving the environment, too, and it's economical in a lot of ways, and you're getting your money back. But, like, random families that have kids, and you're going to leave, like, a six-figure sports car sitting in the garage?
Yeah, I don't see it. Joel, this is kind of a super open-ended question. It can go any way you want it to go. I'm curious, what, like, Monday at noon, what are we opening with? Like, what's the biggest story come Monday? The Texans win, right? The Texans win over the Raiders?
No, we're not even talking about the Texans.
I don't, like, I don't think we're getting that in the first hour.
Really?
Exactly. No. Fourth or fifth segment.
Even if they win?
Fourth or fifth segment Texans.
Oh, I don't know. If they win.
I think we're talking
that
about.
That moves the needle? A win over the Raiders?
A little bit.
Not as much as taking 2 out of 3 from the Yankees and going to the World Series.
Well, there's only 2 games played before then.
Saturday, Sunday, Monday. Okay, so yeah, I guess I was thinking that they were playing.
Is the series
tonight
over?
No, just double down. So they'll win the next 2. We will be talking about a World Series.
Yeah, if we're talking about a World Series on Monday, or we're talking about the fact that the Astros have already gotten 1 and they got a matchup they like in Game 3, that everybody's going to be pretty darn happy. That's what I think. I think that this team, as much as I've been apprehensive and I don't want to get cocky and I want to make sure I don't jinx anything, but this team is just too darn good to not be competitive in all the games in New York. And if that's the case with the Yankee team that I've seen and the struggles that they've had offensively, no matter how good their 2 pitchers are that they're throwing against you, you can match them on the mound. And I believe the best is still yet to come with their offense. Worst case scenario, they're sitting 1-1 Monday. Best case scenario, we're already talking about the World Series. We're talking about the Astros.
I mean, that would be fun. If we're coming into Monday, I mean, I guess it would make next week a little bit, it would make next week.
There is no sweeter scenario on the planet than sweeping the Yankees to go back to another World Series.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. I want to watch more baseball. Like, I'd like to be able to watch baseball next week.
Then watch the National League.
That's true. I will tell you, I told Jeremy this. When I was in Atlanta, I came home after the wedding reception, and the end of Dodgers-Padres was on, and I watched it, and I think that was the first time I've watched a baseball postseason game that wasn't the Astros, because the Tigers haven't been in it in almost a decade now. I think that was the first time I watched a postseason game that wasn't the Astros in probably close to 9 years, or close to 10 years. I think it was 9 years. I think it's how long it's been. And it's because I'm invested in this Astros team enough to, like, you know, be curious about the teams that they may face. But I don't typically do that.
I just look at it and I say, if you look at all the teams that are remaining in the baseball playoffs, the one team that you have extra history with, the one team, because the ideal scenario from a storybook finish is you hammer the Yankees, then you hammer the Dodgers, then you stand on top of the baseball world and say, screw you to everybody else. You hate us because you can't be us, and you continue to roll. But the only team left that really gives you that steel-toed work boot that you can kick in somebody's groin is beating the Yankees, and not just beating them, sweeping them. So I would love to be talking on Monday about the validity of being the Yankees' daddy.
I think that's my answer. My answer is what's going to happen is we're going to come back here on Monday, and we're going to be playing New York, New York to open the show. And we're going to be playing the We Want Houston chants, and we're going to be dancing on the Yankees' graves. That's what I think we'll be doing Monday at noon.
I hope you're right. I hope you're right, because that would be as fun as anything that we do, and the chance to be able to do it with you guys out there would be fantastic, because that's what everybody wants. Everybody wants to not just beat the Yankees. They want to humiliate them.
Joel, I'm pretty much driving straight to the airport as we get out of here.
Well, that's right. You're off to Big D.
I'm headed to Dallas. Never been there before. You got about 1 minute to tell me. Is there anything I should be doing in Dallas or BMAC? If either of you, I don't know if you've
you can check out where a president got shot, because Dallas gave us that.
Yeah, the, what is it? The observatory
to do in Dallas?
The sixth floor.
The observatory, right?
Yeah, sixth floor.
There's nothing near the two stadiums. There's one stadium next to another stadium, and there's not enough around it. What do they call it? The what end?
I don't remember.
Andrew, what's it called? The butt end in Dallas where you're supposed to hang out? The east end? Or
it's worth noting I'm going to be there with my dad. I don't know if that impacts anything.
It's food and it's like restaurants
and bars.
Andrew
didn't really
have
an answer to where you hang out in Dallas. I think that's the answer.
I'm honestly, so this is going to sound pretty, make me sound like a loser, but a lot of times, often, our trip has lined up, because we do this every year, with Michigan having a big game. So a lot of times we just go to a sports bar and watch college football on Saturday. But Michigan has a bye week this week. So,
well, I think there's plenty of places for that. It's very spread out. It's not, like I said, don't go to the stadium looking for atmosphere prior to and around like game days and such. But it's still, it's a fun city. I mean, you can find plenty to do.
So Joel's advice for Dallas is you could find plenty to do.
Don't take his advice and go see the JFK Observatory. Go find like a place where there's a ton of people hanging out and enjoy the atmosphere while you do what you enjoy your dad watching sports, which is what you've done your whole life.
All right, that's going to do it.
Good job, my friend.
Ben Brendan Riley in for Jeremy Branham. Thanks to BMAC. I got yelled at for not saying this to John last time. Thanks to BMAC for doing the hard work. This has been the Killer Bees. Up next is the Wheelhouse. They're in Vegas with Circa. Thank you for listening. ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. I hope you're ready for the best performance in Who Said It we've ever seen. I'm expecting to get every single one right.
I like that.